You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Gemma Goddard. Where are we with COVID-19, and what does the future of vaccination look like? We'll answer your questions today. We'll also have an update on the number of monkeypox cases in Idaho. Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force, is with us again today for our Doctor Roundtable. And don't forget, if you have a question about COVID-19 or about monkeypox, send us an email right now. It's idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hey, Dr. Pate, how's it going today?
Good. Hi, Samantha.
Okay, so it's in kind of a big overall arching question, but we thought we ought to check in. Where are we with COVID-19 at this point?
So it certainly BA5 has pretty much overtaken almost everything else in the United States. And it appears that we have hit the peak of that wave or surge, whatever you want to call it, and that we are coming down. However, I would give two caveats. First, cases are still very, very high. They're coming down and they're less than what they were, but they are still very high. It's what we would call accelerated community spread. So one should not interpret by my comments that, okay, you're free to abandon all caution and you're going to be fine. There's plenty of it out there. The other thing is, normally I wouldn't even comment on this because it's way too soon to say, but as I've talked about on this radio show many times, when we're looking at how things are going and how we expect them to be, we have to look at two things, the behavior of the virus and the behavior of people. And we have had a major change in the behavior of people. And what I saw on the Idaho data is that while the cases are coming down, we do have one little blip going up. And it's not an insignificant increase. Normally, I wouldn't put much stock into that until I saw it happening for 3 to 5 days in a row. However, we had a big change in human behavior. And that is most kids are back in school last week or this week.
Gotcha.
And so I think it's worth just saying, oh boy, let's keep an eye on it. It may turn out to be nothing. Maybe tomorrow and the rest of the week, it'll just head right back on down. Because we've talked about that the testing right now, we know we're missing a lot of cases. So it's hard to make too firm conclusions about it. But I do think that is just one cautionary note.
Well, definitely. And I think anytime we go back to school, whether it's in the fall semester or after one of your major vacations or holidays, you know, there's that risk because just for, you know, a whole lot of people in a smaller enclosed spaces, it's a chance that things could get worse. What is your impression, I guess, having watched COVID from the beginning? We've been doing this a while now and we've gone back to school a few times. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? You mentioned the couple of days of data, but what are you thinking with what you're hearing? Because you hear from a lot of people and read an awful lot of information.
Yeah, let me just preface my comments by saying, we certainly are in a much better position relative to people getting severely ill and ending up in the hospital or dying because of the vaccines. These vaccines have been very effective in that regard. So that's wonderful news. On the other hand, we do have to consider that, number one, we still have a lot of unvaccinated Idahoans, and the younger in age you get, the less they're vaccinated. So when we're talking about school kids, yes, I think we're gonna see fewer, particularly of the older adults, getting really sick or dying because they are fully vaccinated and boosted. many of these kids have yet to have their first dose of vaccine. So that's a concern. The second concern is what we have seen all through 2022 is progressively increased transmissibility among variants. And so what that simply means is the more opportunities that we have a lot of people coming together with a high level of circulating virus that's mm-hmm. highly transmissible, the more likely we're going to have transmission. And that's why I think we do have to be concerned about schools. And some people will say, oh, well, you know, but we don't have to worry about kids. They don't get really sick. They don't get hospitalized. They don't die. Certainly in much lower proportion than adults. But some kids do get very, very sick. And some kids do end up in the hospital. And we have seen more of that with Omicron than we have in previous variants. But the other thing that we're not talking about, and I don't know that I've ever heard a school board even take this into consideration, is the risks of post-COVID complications and the health risks to children, their teachers, and others. It just seems to not be part of our conversation. And, you know, I certainly am concerned about that because, first of all, we don't really understand them very well. We're gaining a lot of knowledge about them, but, you know, they're not fun. And for some people, they're quite disabling. So I do think that with a more transmissible virus, but yet our schools and public in general taking less precautions, you know, that's the ideal circumstances for a virus that would like to infect a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes perfect sense. And you mentioned vaccinations, and with the availability of vaccinations now that maybe we didn't have last year at this time, this is a perfect segue into the future for COVID vaccination, which I know you wanted to talk a little bit about today. So let's talk about it. What is the future when it comes to COVID vaccines and COVID vaccinations? We've heard of all kinds of things out there, pills and something that you can, you know, squirt up your nose and you're vaccinated, plus different combinations. And will it end up being like the flu shot every year? What's the future?
Yeah, Samantha, I think there's a lot of good news forthcoming. So the most immediate news is that we are anticipating authorization of new Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. These vaccines will contain half of a dose of what we previously got, but the other half will be targeted at the Omicron spike protein, particularly BA4 and BA5. Now there's a lot of mixed sentiment among vaccinologists and immunologists as to how much of a game changer this will be. We already know that those people that have gotten fully boosted do have really good protection from getting severely ill. The problem has been that we don't have as much protection about getting infected. And there's not a whole lot of people that think these new, and what they're, because they have two components, they're called bivalent vaccines. A lot of people don't think it's going to be a game changer there, that, you know, it's going to eliminate breakthrough infections where people that are vaccinated won't get infected. It will certainly be a welcome boost to the protection against severe disease and all. But to really change the game to where now we're just not even, people that are vaccinated aren't even getting infected, we may need a different kind of vaccine. And this is also promising. There are nasal vaccines and oral vaccines that are in clinical trials. Some of these are very far along. And so The reason that this is important is that there are many different parts of your immune system, but part of your immune system is right there in your nose where the virus enters. And that doesn't get boosted as much by the current vaccines as it might with a nasal vaccine, which is directed right at the nose. And even the oral pills that help protect the gut and the throat and nose. And so it is possible, again, these are in trials right now to see if this is true, but what our hope is, and what we've got some encouraging data so far, is that you get the full vaccines like we've already been getting, but now add, if it gets authorized, the nasal vaccine or the oral vaccine, and that together, that way you'll have protection against severe disease and hospitalization and death, but also might have significant protection against even getting infected at all. The reason this is important is that the current vaccines, they do give you some protection against long COVID if you get a breakthrough infection. But a recent study showed that that reduction in the risk is 15%. And look, long COVID is terrible. I'll take a 15% reduction in the risk, but that's not what we would like. And so if we do have success with these nasal or oral or both vaccines, now we have an option where, at least for those that will get vaccinated, we can pretty much eliminate the risk of those people even getting long COVID. And of course, the other thing is why we worry about school kids getting infected and why we worry about even vaccinated people getting infected is that even though they don't get very sick, they have the potential to get grandma or grandpa or somebody else in the family who's very at risk infected. And so this could eliminate or greatly decrease that risk as well.
Wow. It's fascinating. Before we take a break, let me just ask about the nasal and the pill vaccines. We have done so many stories and talked so much over the course of the pandemic about the ease of availability of vaccinations, whether it's folks who have a fear of needles or if it's just getting people who can give shots, going to get the shots, people who are adverse to shots. Are we also hopeful about nasal and oral vaccines because they would be easier and simpler and perhaps cross over that ick barrier that comes with a shot?
Samantha, I love it when you use big words with me.
Try.
Well, yes and no. Obviously, taking a pill or doing the nasal spray is, you know, really much easier for those that have fears of needles and so forth. The question is whether any of these vaccines alone is going to be enough. I think where many of us are thinking is it's probably that you're going to need the combination. Now, where the good news could be for the needle fearing folks is that it's possible that what all you would have to do is just get the first couple of the shots, but then we could keep boosting maybe with the pill or with the nasal spray. So maybe then you don't have to keep getting shot boosters. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet, but certainly, you know, we've had a couple advances. The Novavax vaccine for people that were afraid of the mRNA technology, thinking that's too new. Now we've got the Novavax as an option for them. And then I think coming in some point, not this year, but at some point, these nasal and oral pills, we might find that they're good all by themselves. My guess is it's going to be that it's going to be an adjunct to, not a replacement for the other vaccinations. But let's wait and see. We're getting some encouraging results.
Gotcha. Dr. Pate, we've got an email here from Jamie before we jump into some monkeypox news. Jamie thought she heard on a recent Doctor's Roundtable that you suggested kids get 4 doses of the IPV vaccine by age 2. She thought it was 3. Is that just mishearing? Is that confusion? What age does each shot need to happen?
Jamie, thanks for that. What I realized after I got off the air is I think I misspoke, and you're exactly right. It is 3 doses by age 2. You do need a 4th dose, but that 4th dose generally should be given between ages 4 and 6. So what our usual schedule of the IPV, and IPV is the inactivated polio vaccine. It's the only polio vaccine that we use in the United States, essentially. And so what the dose is that typically around 2 months, we would give the child the first dose of IPV. Around 4 months, we would give the second dose. Then between 6 and 18 months, we would give the third dose. So that's where you get 3 doses by age 2. Again, last time I misspoke and I said 4, but it's 3. And then the 4th dose, as I said, you would give between the ages of 4 and 6. However, I think given that we know we've got more of this circulating, I told my kids to get their kids in for their vaccine as soon as the grandchild turned 4.
Wow. And on that, Jean wrote in and asked, would Dr. Pate suggest a polio booster for a woman 79 years old and in good health? Jean says she's going to get her 5th COVID shot next month. And how much time should you have between something like a COVID shot and a polio booster?
Well, we don't know of any need to get boosted again after your 4 shots as a child. Of course, that could change with time because a lot of what we rely on, you've heard the term herd immunity thrown around inappropriately with COVID. But polio is a great example of a vaccine where we are using a herd immunity strategy. And that is that by, even if not everyone can be fully protected because some people will be immunocompromised, et cetera, but, and some will be too young, by getting enough people vaccinated around us, we tend to make that risk pretty small. If we really start getting significant more outbreak of polio, and I don't think we will, then that could change. But for right now, there's no recommendation that you need to get a polio booster if you're older. Now, on the other hand, if you're an adult and you are not sure, or you do know that you were not vaccinated as a child, then yes, you should get vaccinated against polio, and it's not too late. Go in and you would get this same IPV vaccine that we've been talking about. So if you have that, go see your doctor, and then they will give you a schedule for the subsequent shots.
Wow. And let's jump from polio to monkeypox. I think that we started talking about monkeypox on the show just a couple of weeks ago because of the way that places like the World Health Organization and the CDC are concerned. What is the latest on monkeypox this week?
So monkeypox continues to spread in the United States and across the world. And here in Idaho, we now have our 10th identified case in Idaho. Last week it was 9, so we're up to 10. We very well could have more. There's a number of reasons why we may be underdiagnosing monkeypox. Although monkeypox transmission is still increasing around the world, there are some countries that were kind of on fire, but have been rolling out the vaccine pretty efficiently, and it looks like they may be seeing cases kind of level off a little bit. So I think there's still hope that the vaccine strategy will help bring this under control. The problem is we don't have enough of that vaccine. And for right now, because we don't have enough vaccine, it's not going to be enough. In other words, we're going to have people take other precautions to minimize the risk that they're going to get infected due to this. Now, one thing we talked about, the FDA has given the permission to use the vaccine differently so that we can stretch it out. So now, instead of what would have previously been one dose, we can get five doses out of that. Although practically speaking, a lot of healthcare providers are saying really they only get four doses out of the vial. But nevertheless, we can stretch that by giving one fifth of the dose. And then we give it a little bit different way. Normally, this vaccine would be injected under the skin into the fat, just above the muscle. But now we can give it what's called intradermally, which means a little skin prick right at the surface of your skin. We put it right under the skin, kind of like if any of you have had a TB test in the past, that's how they're done. And that, by at least one study, has shown that it generates a pretty much just as good an immune response. Now, it is critical that because we're doing this, you need to get your second shot about 28 days later. And that's really important because doing it this way, we believe it will give you just as good of immune protection, but we don't know for how long. And so that booster is really important.
We also got a question from Anne, who says the news from Australia about the upcoming flu season is that it's going to be bad, particularly for children and adolescents. She wants to know, is there a plan to get the flu vaccination efforts ramped up? Are you seeing the same concerns about flu?
I am. She's exactly right. One of the things that we do, because we know the flu virus changes every year, and influenza is an example of a truly seasonal virus. In other words, we tend to, although there's always a little bit of flu around, it tends to increase really during our late fall and winter. And then it tends to really drop significantly into the spring and certainly by summer. But while we're having low levels, just as your listener commented, then we can look to Southern Hemisphere countries, and Australia does a really good job of influenza monitoring. And what Australia has found is that this was their, because they're just coming to the end of their flu season, where we're getting ready to start our flu season. What they found is this was the worst flu epidemic they've had in at least 5 years. So, we're going to have to be concerned because in previous years, we have not had, in the last couple of years, we haven't had real bad influenza seasons, in large part because we had so many people masking. I don't have to tell people out there what percentage of the population is masking anymore. And you can go to any school and see what percent of kids are in masks. And influenza is a disease that we have known for a long time that the primary vector for spreading it is children in schools. They get infected in schools, they bring it home, then they infect their family members, then those family members infect others by going to work or social situations, whatever. So yes, I think it's gonna be very, very important for people to get their flu shots this year. I generally recommend that people get their flu shot in October. If you are a little reluctant to get your flu shot, then if you have to go in a little bit earlier to see the doctor or something, just go ahead and get it while you're there so we know you get it, because that's the most important thing. But I'll keep an eye on things and let your listeners know if we think we should adjust that timing. But plan for October. I kind of mark on my calendar the middle of October to go get my flu shot. Get it. We know the flu shot's very, very safe, and it's very effective. It's not perfect, But it's really good, again, kind of like the COVID, it preventing you from getting severely ill. And so get that flu shot. And the other thing is, we do know it is possible to get co-infected with influenza and other respiratory viruses, including COVID.
All right. So
that's not good.
No, it's not. So far today on the show, on the Doctor's Roundtable, we've talked about COVID, monkeypox, polio. We have another question on that coming up, and flu. And let me go back over these. We've talked about the COVID virus, the monkeypox virus, the polio virus, the flu virus. I'm getting a similarity here. Viruses and things like pandemics were not on most people's minds, at least not the way they are now, before 2020. We've got the World Health Organization. They have three public health emergencies of international concern right now involving viruses. Why is this happening? And what do we need to be doing differently when it comes to these sorts of viruses that are popping up, moving around the world?
Well, it's an excellent question, Samantha, and I don't have time to fully answer it, but I will give you some points. This is the subject of a book that Dr. Epperle and I have co-written and should come out later this fall. But, you know, what we have to do is we have to learn from these things. You know, we are having, as I said before, we got to look at virus behavior and we got to look at human behavior. And what's changing about human behavior? Well, you know, we are much more internationally connected today. There are millions of people that travel internationally. And so the ability to carry a novel virus from one place to another it's really high. The other thing that we have to learn is, you know, monkeypox, we've known of monkeypox for decades. It was mostly limited in Africa. And so, you know, unfortunately, I think it's a little bit of a cold calculation that, hey, you know, Africa doesn't have the means and the ability to fully investigate it, do the studies about it, treat it. And so we have kind of taken the attitude, well, if it's just hurting Africans, then, you know, we don't have to spend our own money to do it. Well, that's very foolish because, you know, now we have a disease that was previously fairly well limited to a geographic area. But because of international trade, because of international travel, that virus has been repeatedly introduced outside of Africa. And now we're dealing with a global concern. And so, you know, had we stepped in earlier, given vaccinations to that country to vaccinate their folks, try to control the spread of it, and done studies to learn about it, we'd be a lot better prepared today. The same thing about, even though no one could have actually predicted the SARS-CoV-2 virus, we have known for decades that bats carry a lot of coronaviruses. And in fact, they were the source of the first SARS outbreak and then the MERS outbreak. And yet, once we got those under control, we stopped most of our funding for research on those viruses. You know, had we kept doing that research and all, we would learn a lot more. We might have developed better testing sooner, better therapeutics. So, you know, we have to take these things a lot more seriously. We also have to consider whether you believe in global warming or not, whatever the weather changes are that we're experiencing, they are causing shifts in where disease vectors are. So, for example, some people will remember a few years ago, we had an outbreak of Zika virus, particularly like in Florida, the southern states. And previously, those mosquitoes that transmitted it didn't come this far north. But with changes in temperature, now some of those things move. So we have to understand what's happening with the changes there. And then finally, as we're encroaching on areas, a lot of these things you hear about either coming from Africa, where a lot of times people are interacting with the wildlife and hunting it or eating it and encroaching on their territory. So we're having much more interaction. Now we have a lot more potential for that kind of a disease transmission from animals to humans. And then finally, same thing like what we've seen in China with the wet markets, having those very exotic wild animals in cages in proximity with each other and then sold in open market and slaughtered in open market. We've got to learn to impose better infection control.
I'm hearing about what we need to do as a society from you, and as a you know, human race. What can we do on a local level? What can I do as a local person who may not be able to convince entire countries?
I certainly appreciate that. The first thing is that what we can do is we can try to get reliable information. Now, given the listeners to this show, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but we've got to have people get accurate information. There is a significant anti-vax movement that is extremely well-funded, and we now see a lot of effort at undermining our vaccination strategies. That's why we're seeing recurrence of diseases like polio that, frankly, I don't think we've seen in the United States, except for a rare traveler, since like the end of the 70s. Mm-hmm. But if we let up on our vaccinations, we're going to see some of these diseases. And so you can look at Australia. They've had a couple of outbreaks of diphtheria. I've never seen a case of diphtheria because previously everybody got vaccinated. And so I've never seen one. I know what it looks like, but I've never seen a case. But now we're starting to have outbreaks. And we're having outbreaks because people are not getting their kids vaccinated. So the number one thing you can do is get your kids vaccinated. Make sure that you're getting your own recommended vaccinations. And if you got behind, which is totally understandable that you might have gotten behind on your kids or your own vaccinations during this pandemic, go into your doctor, get caught up. And that's the biggest thing you can do is to help us contain that, not just fighting off novel things, but let's not have diseases that we've already conquered have to resurface and we have to go after those again.
Excellent. Excellent advice. All right. Well, we've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have questions about any of the viruses we've talked about today, COVID-19, monkeypox, polio, we've got a couple polio questions. We're going to tackle those next week. Send them. Send us an email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And as I said, we'll tackle it next week. Dr. Pate, I want to thank you for being here yet again to help us through what can be very cloggy times when it comes to information, and thanks for keeping it all clear.
Thank you, Samantha. My pleasure.